All right, time for what's happening. Let's start with Greg Ruberg in just a moment. You're listening to What's Happening on KTWH, and Greg Ruberg is on the phone with us from Lakeview Hospital. Thank you so much for calling in, Greg.
Good morning.
Good morning. We have had a little hiatus from our weekly updates. I know you've been talking with Leo over the summer, and now it sounds like we're going to work on maybe a bi-weekly update for a while, but let's talk a little bit about, we have to return to our original topics. COVID is our concern. Start with the vaccine updates. How about?
All right. Yeah, we had about 3 or 4 weeks of a focus on things other than COVID, but as we were afraid of, it is now back, and it's kind of the primary topic of our conversations here, both internally and across the state. So in terms of vaccination, we did a vaccine clinic last week at Lakeview. We vaccinated another 92 individuals, 12 plus, with Pfizer. And that actually pushed us over the 70% vaccinated mark for Lake County of those 12 plus. So that was a nice milestone to hit. There was certainly strong demand. We were hoping for 30 to 40, and we over doubled that. So we're planning additional vaccine clinics coming up, with the next one being September 1st.
Okay. Now, obviously 70% is not a magic number, because herd immunity is, and nor is herd immunity sort of a cut and dried thing, I guess, because here we are at 70% and we're still talking about this as something that is not under control. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's exactly accurate. What we had thought early on in this, we were being told by our national health experts, CDC, others, that 70% was that mark for herd immunity. Then it shifted to 80%. And now, because of the Delta variant and some other variables, you know, we're looking at more upwards of 85-90%. So we've got a ways to go. And the Delta variant is what we're hoping did not come around, and it's just really changed things both, you know, locally, regionally, and across the country.
Good. Well, let's talk about sort of specific to our area, Lake County, and our awareness of what, you know, what is our situation here? I know that we, I'm sure schools are talking and businesses are talking again, and what relevant information can you give us about that?
Yeah, there's been a lot of activity here in Lake County around COVID over the last probably 3 weeks, I would say. And it started with the CDC report that we were a red county, which means high transmission. And I'll explain a little bit of this, but it gets really detailed and complex and confusing. But really what it comes down to is your positivity rate per 100,000 people. And so when you look at Lake County having a population of about 10,600, you take the amount of positive cases per that population into a multiplier, which is 9.4 something, to get to that, you know, that 100,000. And you look at that positivity rate to see if it's, you know, highly transmissible or not. The good news is, as of yesterday, and again, there's always data lagging on this, so it's it just takes some time to catch up, but we just dropped just below 5% again, which is excellent. To put things in perspective, at least in my head, what I look at is, if you look at having a county of, you know, 70% of the counties vaccinated, we're relatively spread out. We don't have mass transportation to the extent that, you know, of course, big cities and others do.
Right.
It doesn't take a whole lot of cases for us using that CDC formula to kind of bump into that red, which gets people really kind of on high alert.
Yeah.
It's still significant, no question. But, I mean, around 5%, that we were cheering to be down around 5% last winter, or fall and winter. So,
right.
Again, we need to really keep that in perspective and keep doing the right things to prevent it. But it's not like things are out of control in Lake County. They, you know, so
yeah.
We need a different perspective on it.
Yeah. We actually looked at the numbers as well, just sort of the population numbers, and noticed the same thing that you did. Is it doesn't take very many numbers for us to go into the red, just because of our highly rural, just the location we're in. And it wasn't like we all knew people who were having a terrible time with COVID at the time that we were in high alert. We didn't. I know there are other people that, you know, obviously it's just a matter of, you know, how much you are aware is who you know sometimes. So.
Right. I've also encouraged people to go right onto the CDC website and read the footnotes. I mean, it gets to be a lot of specific information, but, you know, they don't take into account county vaccination rates and all those other factors, where if you're in Arkansas where it's 35% vaccinated and you have a positivity rate that starts increasing, I would agree that should be a red state, because the potential for
something
really exploding is a lot higher. I mean, we know vaccinations work. And
yeah.
So having 70% of your population vaccinated has a big impact on that. Not perfect, but it has a positive impact.
Yeah, yeah. And then I'm guessing with your with a high rate of people coming in to your last clinic, that maybe just indicates that more and more people are sort of freely deciding that this is something that they want to do for their reasons.
Yeah, I would agree. A couple of comments around that. I worked that clinic in that evening, and you know, I probably talked to 40 or 50 people, I suppose, throughout the 3 hours. But people said, I heard from a number of people, this is kind of scary now. I mean, I'm watching the news, I'm listening to the radio, and younger people are getting sick. And, you know, primarily the population that came in were, you know, the younger population. There was a number of school-age kids and kind of young adult, middle-aged people. A few people that were in the high-risk group, of course, that had not yet been vaccinated. But when people start seeing on the news that 40- and 50-year-olds are ending up in hospitals and ICU beds or kids, I think it changes your perspective on COVID-19. And they said, it was time to get this thing. I'm not waiting any longer. I got the sense, had it been just the COVID virus before, when it was running its course, that they probably wouldn't have been in here. But the Delta variant may have kind of pushed them over that point of decision-making. So that was interesting to hear.
Yeah. And now it sounds like there is a new mandate for vaccinations and long-term care with the workforce. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this has been the hot topic, and actually I was in a meeting this morning and got text messages and phone calls throughout. I'm on the Hospital Association Board in Minnesota, and so this is kind of our primary topic. So what happened in the last couple of weeks to a month is many large health systems across the state went to a vaccine requirement. So all employees, volunteers, and students would have to get vaccinated to remain employed. And so Essentia and Duluth did that. St. Luke's and Duluth did it, which we're a part of, so that applied to Lakeview. So it started in hospitals and health systems, the larger systems typically, but not all. And then just this week, President Biden came out and announced this mandate for all long-term care. And what I read that the other night. What it said is all staff of long-term care, so skilled nursing facilities and long-term care facilities, have to be vaccinated or risk reimbursement from CMS, which is Medicare, their primary funding source, any kind of governmental payment. So
Okay. Basically,
if they don't adopt that, they're not going to get paid and they're going to close. I mean, that's the bottom line. They can't stay open without it. So that came out. And I think that the big issue, the same thing that we had discussions in healthcare about is, you know, I think the vast majority of healthcare people are pro-vaccine and, you know, are vaccinated and supported. The challenge is on the workforce side. So in hospitals or healthcare, we're going to lose a percentage of our workforce that just choose not to be vaccinated or don't apply for an exemption, either medical or religious.
Okay.
And so we'll have to figure that out to keep our operations moving forward. But then when you add in long-term care, it's the same thing. I think they have a little bit higher percentage of unvaccinated kind of in general.
Yeah.
And there are some positions in long-term care that they could just leave the field and go work in some other type of industry. Where in healthcare, if you're a registered nurse or a rad tech or a lab tech or a physician, there aren't any other industries that you probably can go into to get away from the vaccine requirement. So, but if you're in housekeeping or food service or certified nursing assistant, things like that, you could go work in somewhat similar industries. So the risk is, what happens if there's a big workforce shift out of long-term care and healthcare? That'll impact hospitals, ERs, surgery. I mean, it'll impact everybody. We're all in this together.
Right.
So, But on the flip side, again, people are saying, well, the staff should be vaccinated to protect the residents. That's, the residents have a right to be protected from COVID. You know, hopefully they're vaccinated. So it's like any complex problem, there's no easy answer. I mean, no matter how you look at this, there is no right answer or easy answer.
And you do make it sound like there is a possibility for an exemption. So if someone really feels like their particular situation warrants an exemption, they can apply for that. That's encouraging to know.
Correct. Yep, there's really two routes that way. So that will be helpful. And that's the same kind of process we've used for influenza in the past. You know, if people have a true medical contraindication to a vaccine, we're not going to force them to get that, have a negative medical or health outcome. So they can apply for that with support from their physician or provider. So that's in place.
Yeah. Well, Greg, once again, you're in the middle of plenty of probably controversy, even as there's a lot of good trends and hopefully positivity as well happening in the hospital and other medical places. Would you say the atmosphere is helpful and positive, or is there a lot of tension, or how are things going sort of inside as an insider right now?
Yeah, you know, I would say up until this week, things were fairly stable. People were working hard. The demands are high. Patient volumes are up. You know, I think right now, this week, with all of the mandate to long-term care and the information on boosters and all the controversy between the Biden administration and the CDC and kind of leading experts around the country not agreeing on exactly are boosters needed and if they are, when and all that, I think there's just more, there's some anxiety around just a lot of information and not a lot of consistency or clarity.
Yeah.
And this goes back, we've been through this many times before, so I wouldn't say it's, we've done it before, we know how to navigate this, we're fine, but it's just trying to get accurate, clear, honest information out to people so they can read it and understand it, and then as it changes, we update it. So that's always the challenge.
Yeah, yep, just rolling with it. I had a conversation with Taylor Holm this morning from Community Partners, and she definitely said the number one quality we need right now is just the ability to adapt and flex, because things just keep changing.
Right. And there's some people, you know, I was on a phone call yesterday where somebody was really heated and really emotional, and I completely understand how and why, and we just, you know, you talk through that, and you try to see both sides, and this was regarding an issue, kind of a state-level issue, and had different opinions, and that's healthy. You know, we get through that. We've done it, like I say, we've done it before, and it's just part of being in these roles.
Yep. Well, thank you so much, Greg. We will touch base again in a couple weeks.
Perfect. Have a great day and have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. That's Greg Ruberg, CEO of the Lakeview Clinic and Hospital. You're listening to What's Happening on KTWH. In just a moment, we will have Kenny Blumenfeld with Weather Tidbits. So thanks for listening and stay tuned. Kenny Blumenfeld in his weekly check-in with KTWH. Thanks, Kenny, for coming on this morning.
Oh, well, always good to be on. I'm sure probably your listeners are starting to hate me.
You are the messenger, but we're not going to destroy the messenger, I promise. I think we're hoping for accurate information. I've gotten at least one request this week for any kind of a long-term... Are we destined for a hot, dry fall, or is there, how much certainty is there? But let's not jump ahead yet. First, just want to share with you that we have had a very hot, dry week. I think it may have been the hottest yet. It was in the 90s yesterday in town, and somewhat humid too, and so that was really something for us. The water temperatures, I'll tell you, because Mark's out on the lake every day, are in the 70s, at least for several feet. So what people like to swim in, so there are people swimming just like it's a pool out there. And so I guess what you told us last week has pretty much come true, and we thought there might be relief. I'm watching to see if the percentage chance of rain of precipitation is dropping, and we know it's going to be hit and miss. So I don't know. First, what can you tell us about the potential rain for the weekend?
Yeah, it doesn't look. It's not a slam dunk. And I'm not happy that I have to say that, because I know that not far from town, you know, you just go northwest, I don't know, what is it, 25 miles, and you have the Greenwood Fire.
Yep.
And I actually know some folks who live in that area also, and they were evacuated, and it's not pleasant for anyone, and you hope that people stay safe. We've got a really powerful weather system coming through Minnesota today. It's a nice, good-looking kind of fall-like low pressure system, and all that means for listeners is it's, you know, the kind that rotates counterclockwise. It has a center of rotation and strong warm front, which we're already well within, but then a strong cold front coming through on the backside of it. This low pressure system is going to track across northwestern Minnesota into Manitoba. It's pretty intense in that it's about as strong as the type that in the wintertime, you know, produce winter storm warnings.
Okay.
It's going to be intensifying, and it's going to bring with it some showers and thunderstorms. Some of those are going to be heavy. We're talking about this evening. The downside of this is the system is so energetic that the rain and thunderstorms will tend to follow, you know, they'll form along that front, but then they will migrate towards that low pressure system. So as the precipitation sweeps from southwest to northeast across the state, it's going to kind of lurch leftward towards that center of low pressure. And what that means for those of us in eastern Minnesota, that includes us here in the Twin Cities and also folks in the Arrowhead, that means that the precipitation chances have become a little more iffy. In the more positive scenario, the thunderstorms remain intact and they just kind of plow eastward and they get all of us with a nice little soaking rain, maybe a half inch or so. In a much less positive scenario, we end up with almost nothing, and that includes the Twin Cities, Duluth, Two Harbors, and kind of the farther east you go, the more likely that is. And there's actually a decent chance that we end up somewhere in the middle with, you know, precipitation, but not necessarily precipitation of consequence for the given situation. I'm not a fire expert. I don't know how much rain it takes to put out a still relatively small forest fire like the Greenwood Fire.
Yeah.
But I think you want a good soaking in any case. I mean, anyone who's poured a little bit of water on a good bonfire knows that, you know, the first drops just go right back into the air and you hear some sizzling and that's about it. So, yeah, the better news is we can try again on Sunday night.
Okay.
And I don't have a lot of, I can't make any guarantees with that one either. But then we get into a pattern next week that does look more active, and it's going to be a lottery again. We don't know who's going to kind of end up under the boundary that separates the warmer air to the south and the milder air to the north, but there will be multiple chances for precipitation, it looks like, next week. So hopefully, you know, between the iffy conditions tonight and the iffy conditions Sunday night and the maybe slightly better odds in total that we have next week, that we can hope that you end up with enough precipitation to put the fires out and enough to just get us by for another week.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that's not the worst case scenario that you could have said. So I'm glad to hear that. I mean, we all know it is hit and miss at this point. So one last follow-up question. If you're saying the farther east you go, maybe the less likely you're going to get a real douser. Does that mean that same precip is going to fall to our west? And should we be glad for our neighbors to the west? Or does that mean it may not actually precip at all?
Oh, yeah, no. The worst drought in Minnesota right now is actually out on the prairies in northwest Minnesota, extending up towards International Falls, so into the boggy areas too, but out on the prairies towards the Red River. These are places where there's only been 5 or 6 inches of precipitation all year.
Yeah.
And they are the ones most likely to see some rains tonight and again on Sunday night. And so, yeah, be happy for them. It's not going to pull them out of the drought. It might not even make their drought categories budge. But if they get it, yeah, I think at this point we'll be happy for anyone who can get any rain. I was out in western Minnesota. It's just, you know, it's the same story everywhere.
Yeah.
It's dry. Things look brown and yellow. The leaves are starting to turn. And you can just tell that there's a significant water shortage pretty much anywhere you look. So, yeah, we'll be happy for folks who do get rain. There's a kind of a mixed blessing coming this weekend. Whether you get the rain or not, the temperatures are going to drop. So I think expect one more toasty day today, unless that lake breeze kind of starts kicking in. Mm-hmm. I would expect very warm conditions inland for sure. Another day in the 80s, maybe 90s. And then this cold front will come through tonight. And this is a mixed blessing because the temperatures are going to drop into September-type territory for the weekend. That's great, right? Temperatures are going to fall into the 60s and 70s during the daytime.
Yeah.
So you're really going to feel a difference. So one thing that I'm a little concerned about, and I'm not a fire weather forecaster, so I'm just putting out this person's concern, is that if the fire doesn't get doused tonight, the winds tomorrow on Saturday are going to be pretty brisk, and they're going to be coming out of the west. And so it's not going to be, the air isn't going to be super dry. The relative humidity will be kind of right around 50%, but there's already a fire. And so I guess one concern is that the strong westerly winds could actually move the fire to the east a bit. I will leave the forecasting and the specifics to the pros, but all week as this fire has been burning, the winds have been coming out of basically the same direction. And that, combined with the firefighting efforts, has kept the fire in pretty much the same place and pretty much heading in the same direction.
Right.
It might shift tack a bit tomorrow. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I know that they are certainly not counting on any precip because they've just called it an emergency. And so allowing for more federal resources to come in, and the overall picture is still that good conditions for fire will continue. And I'm sure that's partly the precip, but also the wind, like you say, like it's actually supposed to be windier. So that's good for cooling us down, but not good for the fires.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what we can hope is that, you know, next week, if we don't get the precipitation this weekend through Monday morning, at least we get more lottery tickets next week. There's really no guaranteeing. I mean, we're in a pretty substantial drought at this point, and we're kind of getting used to precipitation events disappointing us. That said, well, droughts do end, and they do have to sort of slow down at some point, and we are approaching a seasonal shift, and there are some signs on the models that next week is going to, you know, at least put a small dent in the drought in some areas. So you can hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I had better news, but, you know, droughts are tough, and when you go into fall, you know, that's when you got to be especially careful in the forested areas, because that's when things really dry out. Even if the summer was kind of psychologically the hot and dry time, it's fall when you lose the moisture in the vegetation that's kind of most dangerous for fires.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think we can kiss goodbye to any kind of recreational fire for the remainder of this season until the snow flies. I'm wondering if you have any sense of, I know there was one listener that heard that they were anticipating a hot, dry fall. Is that how much weight can we put into stuff like that?
I would say moderate. When we look at other drought years, so the more recent ones, 1976, 1988, 2012, and 2011 in particular, those years all had kind of different behaviors of fall. So in 1988, we had kind of a clean, change in the pattern after a brutal summer.
Hmm.
And fall, I wouldn't say fall restored normalcy, but we had precipitation and mild weather. In 2012, we had episodic, 2011 and 12, we had episodic, very warm conditions right into fall. Of course, 2011 was, I believe that was the Pagami Creek fire up,
yeah,
up in
right.
Minnesota, and that really took off in the fall. So the current outlook from the Climate Prediction Center has kind of indicated better than normal likelihood of being warm and better than normal likelihood of being dry as you get into, say, September and October. And those are really the critical periods. After, once you get into late October and November, you're in fall. Deep fall, the relative humidity is generally very high. It tends to be cooler and kind of moist, and the fire weather often starts backing down at that time. So the biggest area of concern is really September and into October. And, you know, in the official forecast from the Climate Prediction Center is slightly better than normal odds of both warm and dry, but not slam dunk. Like the epicenters of the warm and dry conditions are out over Montana and Idaho and the western Dakotas, and they only graze northwestern Minnesota. And when you look into the Arrowhead, it's a split between kind of equal chances of above and below normal precipitation and this area of slightly more likely to be below normal precipitation. And the temperature is roughly the same, kind of the lowest category of above normal chances
yeah.
for warm conditions. When you look at the three-month outlook, it's similar. It's more likely as we get through November and into October and through November that will be warm with kind of a coin toss for precipitation.
Okay.
The kind of a typical amount of confidence in a long-range forecast, which is we don't really know what September is going to bring. If we, you know, we could get a wayward drifting remnant tropical weather system that drops 5 inches of rain, and it would be a totally normal behavior for September during an active hurricane season. But we have no idea if this is going to happen or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, yep. It's not something that we could predict. And that kind of thing could happen inside of a predominantly dry condition. And there's a lot of uncertainty in our relationship with the tropical weather systems and all of that. So the one thing I can say is we're looking like an El Ni- or a La Nina winter, and those do tend, not always and not with high frequency, but they do tend, when they follow droughts, to be a little more wintry than what we've had recently. And so there might be some hope that we get some overwinter precipitation, even if fall doesn't give us what we need. Okay. It's not a slam dunk at all.
Okay. Well, thanks, Tenny. We're out of time, but thanks so much, and we'll see you again next week. That was a great recap. All right. You take care.
Catch you.
Bye-bye. That was Kenny Blumenfeld, senior climatologist for the Minnesota DNR.